Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Are you looking for someone to help you with your business? Are you a woman who has ADHD and looking for someone to help you automate your business and make it more productive? My next guest is, has ADHD. She understands what it's like to be neurodivergent and be a woman and be a business owner. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage and let's learn more about her. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Sarah Wooden. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sarah and I were just talking about our diagnosis and everything and sharing stories. So, Sarah, what is it like being diagnosed late in life?
It is both eye-opening and frustrating. It's both validating and grief as well, because suddenly a lot of things make sense. You know, it made sense why life felt like walking through mud and why I had to try so hard to make habits stick. I'm 32 years old and I still have to remind myself to brush my teeth every night. Like, it's not, the habits never sunk the way that they should. And so getting motivation, getting out of bed, doing daily routine stuff has always felt so hard, and I always felt like there was something wrong with me. And you know, that piece of advice, just get up earlier and everything will be solved and you'll be more productive, and it never worked, and I thought there was something wrong with me. Getting the diagnosis has been eye-opening, and I understand now why certain things frustrate me and why I react quickly to certain things and why some things are hard and why some things are really easy. I can spot my strengths and my weaknesses a lot easier. But there's also so much grief tied up in that as well. I was just sharing with you about my experience of anxiety as a child, you know, being very, very anxious even from a very small child, from 18 months to two. I was so driven by people pleasing and perfection. My mum would just have to look at me sideways. I'd burst into a blubbering mess, and I'd never do that thing again. Mum said I was very easy to parent as a small child because I was just so anxious about those things. Trouble sleeping right from a very young age, and replaying every conversation I'd had during the day, wondering who I'd upset, all those sorts of things. And then eventually getting a diagnosis of PTSD purely for being perfectionist, people pleasing, oldest child, which ended up snowballing into, because I felt sick all of the time, started messing with eating. And then the anorexia thought processes actually took hold, and it ended up in a really bad place by 19. And there's a lot of grief tied up in, if someone had seen me for what it actually was. Now I know that I've gotten a diagnosis of ADHD. Unofficially, I have a diagnosis of autism as well. I just haven't paid for that final report, but we've done all the testing and we know roughly where I sit. If someone had seen it for that and actually helped me manage those things sooner, how might those things have taken hold differently or been supported differently to find different strengths and not impacted my life in the same way?
How old were you when you got diagnosed?
This year, so 32.
So you're a brand new baby. Well, so welcome to the club.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I mean it's not a great club, but we're a bunch of smart people. I mean, I've looked at what you do. I mean, you're quite impressive. You got quite the impressive resume and everything. People put us down, don't think that we're smart, but in actuality, we're almost as smart as smarter than they are.
I think we look at things in a different way. I think we're very good at looking at the big picture things. And so there's some things that we truly excel in. Some of the little picture things, like the typo in a post or something like that, sometimes we overlook them, but it's just a different way of looking. And this is where we can work so well to complement other people, because we fill in the gaps with the bigger picture thinking that some people just can't do.
I mean, people say that we lack empathy, but, and I talked about this with somebody before, the truth of the matter is, it's not that we lack it, if we wear it on our sleeves. We are over empathetic. everything we see. That's why we're over emotional. But at the same time, it's what makes us care so much about whatever our special project is, our special interest. It's because we focus so much on it because we care about what we're doing.
Absolutely.
So when you got diagnosed, did like the whole world just open up for you and like, oh, this is why I am the way I am, why I do what I do.
Absolutely. I was actually the trigger for me in finally getting diagnosed. I had a suspicion I was for a couple of years. Thanks, Instagram Reels. I learned so much about myself over the last couple of years watching the reels. It showed me so much about how my brain worked and what my strengths were. However, earlier this year, I hit burnout quite badly. I got to the point that I really just wasn't coping with life anymore. It was impacting my clients, it was impacting my family, it was impacting me on a very deep level. And so the trigger for me was to go get help. I'm like, if it is ADHD, I need help because everything is about to fall apart if I don't. And so I got the diagnosis. I started working with a counselor to support the rest of it. And I completely restructured my business because I recognized that actually holding five, six, seven ongoing clients and holding all of their mental load and care being so deeply invested, like I care about my clients' businesses so much and being so deeply invested in so many people's businesses was really actually taking a toll. Plus, the whole ADHD thing, after a while, things aren't new and shiny anymore and it starts getting harder. So, what I did was I actually changed. I took a month off, just let go of everything for a little while. Unfortunately, I had to let my favorite clients go, which was really hard. And that was, really big thing to actually have to have those conversations, but transition my business into short-term projects only for now. And it has been terrifying because I let go of all that ongoing money. And I'm so grateful I'm still on really good terms with my clients. They're some of the coolest people I know. But now I have a business that works for me really well. And so the dopamine of being able to come in, solve problems, like I get to come in and solve those big problems that people just can't get their heads around, and then tap out. So everything is new and shiny all the time. Everything is puzzles to solve all the time. And I've been able to do that based upon the fact that now I know how my brain works and how to actually support it long term to try break that cycle of this burnout phase that I kept ending up in, every 1 to 2 years, depending upon what was going on in life at the time. But I don't want to end back there all the time. Now I know how I can actually support myself better.
You mentioned it about big things being big and shiny. What people don't realize about those of us with ADHD is we're constantly chasing the dopamine. Is because we find one project, we fall in love, and all of a sudden it just becomes, like you put it, dull and boring, and we lose interest. That's why you'll look at someone who has ADHD and you look at how many jobs they've been to. It'll be countless numbers of jobs. They'll be job hopping and they'll never be happy. And then you look at somebody who's not neurotypical, not neuro, who's neurotypical, not neurodivergent, and they stay with one job. It's hard for those of us with ADHD, even AFD, to keep one job.
I think we have a lot more freedom to do that now. I think it is more acceptable to job hop now than it was. I look at my granddad and he was about as autistic as they come, He had the trucks, he had the men's shed happening where he had this local community of people who'd come to work with him, but he wouldn't talk to any of them. He'd just coexist with them and they'd do their own thing, ate the same thing at the same time every single day, expressed love in actions, never words. My mum never heard the words I love you from him ever. They didn't hug, but he protected her in ways that she only found out, towards the end. He's, by very definition, the profile of autistic traits for a lot of people. But he did the same thing for his entire life, day in, day out, on the same routine. And that's what he loved. So would he have changed it now when it's more socially acceptable? Maybe. I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
It is. I mean, times have changed, but the question is, do people change with the times? Would someone who's autistic back in the day of your granddad change who they are to fit society today? And that's a good question. I mean, would somebody change, or would they be happy where they're at?
I think that's the difference between being happy where you're at and staying where you're at because you've been told you have to stay in a box and you feel like it's nailed shut around you.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the problem is when we're autistics or even ADHDs in our workplace, we mask because we know it's the only way we can fit in. You come home and you're exhausted. You just want to lay down, turn off the lights, and wait for that your energy to build back up. Things have changed from now and then. I mean, more and more companies are being accepting of autism and those who have ADHD. I mean, it's just a changing times. It's, the question is, do those who were diagnosed back then, do they want to change, or do they just want to stay where they are, stay in their lane and be happy?
I don't really have an answer for that, but I love hearing people's stories of what they love to do.
Anyways, what made you feel that you had an autism?
I hadn't actually picked it up. I mean, there were things that I probably had an inkling, that when things aren't put away in the cupboard properly, getting upset about things, hating routine, I realized that I needed to buy a new jumper a couple of years back. It took me 3 weeks of researching before I bought the jumper, going into the shoe shop and getting upset because they didn't have the same shoes anymore. I couldn't just buy the same shoes. Just little things like that. I'd always wondered why I was so fussy about certain things. But it was actually my psychologist that picked it up. And she went, "So, with what you're dealing with and how you're actually tackling the problems, I don't think it's just ADHD. I think you would be much deeper in burnout if that was the case. I think there's something else going on there that is actually kind of holding you together at the moment." And so we actually looked at the autism testing, and it's very low, like it's level one, she thinks.
Functioning, yeah.
But yeah. It's been, ah, oh, as I went through the questions, like, ah, oh, I thought everybody did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. When I got tested, it's like, we're first going to split you and your mother up. We don't want to know what, because we don't want to know what you think your mother knows. We want to know what your true feelings of yourself are.
Feelings of yourself.
And then came the questions, then came, okay, here's a story, a cartoon, you got to put them in the proper order. Here's a tentagram, can you make this shape out of these like things? And to finally be told you're level one autistic was kind of an eye-opener to me. I knew I was autistic, but I just didn't know exactly where in that realm I was.
Did that feel like the answer you were looking for, to hear that it was level one?
Yeah, because I mean, family knew I was pretty bright. They knew I didn't need all the help that a level two would need, but it answered a lot of things of why I see the world differently than everyone else. I mean, my friends have always looked at me a little differently because the way I act at times, or because I would say something that would either be inappropriate or at wrong timing. But it explained a lot of things to me. I mean, I remember my mother telling me once, you know, you used to take apart your father's tools just to see how they work. And that explained why I would do that. Now, let's get back to your ADHD. Do you deal with racing thoughts?
Always.
How do you deal with
Always.
that? And how do you sleep with that?
Look, nothing is always going to be a perfect solution in my experience. Things work, and sometimes we might need three or four strategies to help, and sometimes it's still not a perfect system. As far as the racing thoughts, I've found that when I cannot stop the racing, music is a really good one for me. It's almost like I can attach all of my thoughts onto one thing. And so sometimes that might look like playing music at nighttime. It almost always looks like playing music during the day. I can't work, I can't function unless I have music playing. There's a certain number that a number of hours you have to listen to Spotify for before you cost them more money than you pay them. I just about hit that number every year. It's, music is almost always going, has been a really, really helpful one for me. Using my diary or a planner, I, being a system strategist, like I have task management systems, I use ClickUp quite comprehensively. But for me, it also looks like a paper diary because if it's not in front of me, it doesn't exist. So while I have ClickUp and I go to it when I'm working on something, this is my hub of all of the things that I have to do and all of the things that I have to think about, and adding sticky notes when I run out of room and, those sorts of things. But sharing the mental load has been a really key part. I can remember a few years ago, my husband would message me and he'd be like, "I'm at the supermarket. I'm just about to go through the checkout. Is there anything we need for dinner?" And I'm like, I've got a million things on my brain right now, much less having to filter through the mental inventory of not only what are we eating, but what's in the cupboard and what do we need and what have we run out of and all of the things. So actually discussing what mental load looks like as a family within the business, within our relationship, all of those things has been really helpful for easing some of that racing thoughts, because I know that it's not all on me now and I don't actually have to carry it all by myself anymore. Messaging throughout the day. So my husband gets a million messages from me throughout the day as things pop up, and that's been helpful as well. I'm sure that's not necessarily helpful for everybody and not everybody can do that, but for my husband, he just doesn't respond to the messages if he doesn't have time to, and he will eventually respond to them when he can. But being able to push it to someone else sometimes helps take it off my brain as well.
I mean, I kind of understand that because there'll be times where I'll be cooking or something, and my mom will come up and she'll be like, "You don't have to follow exactly to the letter." And then she'd be like, "You don't have everything out you need." And I'll be like, "Well, I'm going systematically one instruction at a time." My mom's like, "You can't do it like that. You gotta have everything out prepared so it's ready to go, so you're not wasting time. You gotta have everything out." And my mind just can't handle that.
It makes the task too big, because the first thing you have to do is you have to read the recipe, you have to remember the ingredients, and you have to get everything out. So it means that you're tackling this task instead of this task.
I mean, from my ADHD and my racing thoughts, I mean, I take CBD at night. And otherwise, if I don't, I'll sit there and be talking to myself all night. Or I'll be going over the day's activities like you do. And I'll be, and it'll be 2 o'clock in the morning by the time I'm exhausted and I'll fall asleep.
Isn't super ideal for setting the next day up very well. I 100% get that. 2 o'clock's almost always that time when the panic gets me. So get waking up with like that feeling of, oh, what did I forget? And sometimes it's things that maybe I could do something about, but oftentimes it's not. It's just, suddenly your brain is like, but look at all this stuff you forgot about.
Yeah, my mind is like that sometimes, and my mind is like, "Oh, wait a minute. Did you do this? Did you prep for this? Did you take your
Did you lock the
medicine?
car?
Have you had it where you leave your house, think you locked your door, don't remember, turn around, come back, and double check?" I can't remember the number of times I've done that. I'll go to walk my dog, and I'll be like, "Did I lock my door?" And then I'll grab her, pull her back, and I'm like, "Come on, I need to check the door." I'm like, "Oh, okay, it's locked." And then we'll go. I can remember countless times, or I'll remember times I forgot to close the back door, and I come back and I'll see the back door open, and I'm like, "Oh God, I forgot to close that door."
The front door, I don't struggle with so much because it's one of the old school ones where you pull it shut and it's just locked. But certainly the car, I forget whether I've locked the car all the time, and I've definitely got up in the middle of the night to go check coop cages and things like that because I couldn't remember if I'd actually locked them. So yes, absolutely related to that.
Now, how do you keep yourself focused with your ADHD? I know with me, focus is a hard thing.
It is a really hard thing. Again, I've got lots of different strategies. I've got a NFC sticker on my desk, so when I touch my phone to it, it puts my phone into like a limited mode where only certain people can contact me, and it turns off all the
Ooh, that's cool.
notifications. That helps. Drinking lots of water, I notice when I start struggling to focus, often I'm like, it only takes a very, very small percentage of dehydration to impact productivity. So that's a big one. Using a timer is a big one, but also understanding where I'm at cyclically as well. So I know as a female that there'll be certain times when I'm really good at the technology, and certain times I'm really good at the marketing, and certain times that I'm really good at the house cleaning. And if I'm trying to do the wrong thing in the wrong time, it just makes it that much harder. So if I'm really struggling to focus, sometimes it's a, okay, so is this the right task to be tackling right now? Or if it is and I'm still struggling to focus, can I start with a something with a really, really little task to get that instant dopamine and slowly build into it? Because I just can't tackle that big thing right now. It's too big, it's too overwhelming. I can't focus. My brain has decided that I can't do it. Can I back off and start building some dopamine and snowballing it into actually getting momentum to focus on the big thing?
That kind of reminds me of me in some senses, like we're working on a jigsaw puzzle. Originally, I'll get that energy and I'll start going. I'll start being able to put the border and everything, and then I'll get something. All of a sudden, that energy just starts dropping and dropping and dropping. And then I'll just sit there staring at it and I just won't have the energy. And I'm waiting for that energy to build back up to say, hey, let's go at it again.
The big one for me is something like an audit. So I did one of them last week, actually. I'm good at them. I really like being able to look at it and solve all the problems and look at how all the pieces are moving together and be able to spot those things that haven't been spotted before. I like them, but they are so hard to build the motivation up to. It took me an entire week to actually focus on this thing. And every time I sat down to it, I just couldn't do it. And finally, Friday night, I'd said it'd be done by the end of the week. I'm like, here's your thing. I finally got it done. Because I couldn't focus on it. So sometimes the deadline thing is kind of my go-to because I just can't focus otherwise.
Now, earlier you mentioned you've gone through burnout. How did you get yourself out of it?
Slowly, doing less, letting go of clients, unfortunately, was, I had to do it. I really didn't want to, but backing off to be doing less, working with a counselor has been really helpful, but also reminding myself of what I can do. Stop trying to put things on my plate that aren't a good fit for me has been really helpful. Saying no, setting up better boundaries. Hey, that's not a good fit, or no, I can't commit to that, or I'm not putting my hand up for anything else, sorry. Like, some of those things, but it's just time. Like, it's been 6 months. It's taken time, and I still have days where I wake up, I'm like, I just can't do today. Kids, we're having a TV day and we're just gonna cuddle on the couch and eat snacks. Like, sometimes I'm still on those days. But overall, I'm doing a lot better now. People are seeing the difference. It took time though. It takes time to get to burnout, and it definitely takes time to get out of it. I'm trying to learn a little bit more about like adrenals and regulating the nervous system and things like that to sort of do the whole body approach. But again, when you're in burnout, it's really hard to sometimes implement some of those strategies. It can be really hard to, you're already coping, struggling to cope with holding what you've got, and now you're trying to put something else on it. And so I've found that really hard with all of like the self-care strategies. I'm like, but I can't hold what I've got, much less you telling me that now I need to, you know, make the broth and do this meditation and go for a walk. Like, I can't hold what I've got, much less, you know, put other things on it. So it's slow, just little little bits at a time, and we'll get there.
Have you had any clients that have come to you and say they are in burnout, and what do you do to help them get out of it?
Very many times, the first thing we look at is where has their business become a monster? Where are they losing so much time? You know, they're up till 2 o'clock in the morning responding to emails or whatever it might be. And how can we automate that stuff, template as much of it as possible so that they can unplug those hours from their business? Because I think as business owners, especially, we get to this point of, I know business is hard at the moment, but if I just do the work, well, then I'll get to the end of it and then it will be easier. And so then we get caught in this cycle of working until late at night, and then we go to bed, and then we get up and do it the first thing in the next morning. And we end up in this cycle where it just becomes business and work and business and work and business and work. And somewhere in there, we take care of the family and do the housework. So we have to be able to put strategies in place to unplug from the business more. And that might be starting a millionth hobby, because, you know, as with ADHD and autism, we've tried it all already, but, you know, maybe there's something new that you could try. Or maybe it's a new TV show that you can just attach into for a little while, or whatever it is going to be, but making yourself unplug from the business for a little while. And when business owners that I work with are struggling to keep everything moving, the first thing we have to do is work out how to give them back some of that time that they're bleeding in their business. And so typically this will be through like the inquiry booking system, or it'll be through the onboarding, it'll be through the lead generation. Somewhere in those three places will typically be where I'll find those hours. So one of my early clients, I found her about 10 hours a week in, I freed up for her 10 hours from processes. It was one thing to get delegated to me, but that was still 10 hours that I couldn't spend on other things. So we saved about 10 hours by putting the right systems and automations in place for her. She was a consultation-based business and everything was being done manually. So being able to set all that up for her, which meant she had 10 hours from the business, she could either choose to do 10 hours of client work, or she chose to go to the beach or spend time with her family or whatever it was. And so that was really key for, like, her feedback to me was, I feel like I can breathe now because I didn't feel like I was breathing before. So that's, I mean, it's not the only thing that we do, but typically the first thing is we just work out how we can give them some time back and stop them feeling like they are drowning every moment of the day.
That almost sounds like what happened with me at school. I was struggling with my master's, my courses, and needing help. My disability advisor set me up with a well-being advisor, and she gave me a work-study program. And all I had on it was work, study, work, study, eat, work, study, eat, work, study, eat. No time for relaxation. And I remember one day I'd come outside and my friend just looks at me and he goes, "You look like shit." My mouth just dropped and I just told him, "All I've been doing is studying and eating and not even time to relax." He's like, "Dude, you need to take a break. You need that break. Your mind." And it didn't occur to me that I was putting myself into burnout by just doing this. And then the minute I started to relax, started doing fun things, hanging with my friends, all of a sudden my energy levels started to rise. I realized I needed this time for my body to regenerate and rejuvenate,
And
because
also,
otherwise, go on.
when we function like that, we're telling our brain we're in crisis mode. And so we're doing all the wrong things when it comes to actually functioning well, because we're telling our brain that not only are we dopamine deficient, because that's how our brains are wired, but now everything is high on cortisol and high on adrenaline, and everything is out of whack. So when we do it, and we all do it, but some of us, are more prone to it than others, we're telling our brains we're in crisis mode all of the time.
So what are some of the other issues you see your clients coming to you facing?
Oftentimes it'll be that the systems that they've got in place are not working for them. I have big opinions about certain software out there. not to name names, but certainly space systems that give you floating unicorns, I don't think are very friendly for neurodivergent people because it's just one massive long list and it is so overwhelming. Every neurodivergent client that I have worked with using a intense list space system like that, they don't use it. They try, but they can't use it because the systems have not been set up for how their brain works. Because what tends to happen is, you know, they'll pay money to work with the coach and the coach will be like, the business coach will be like, well, these are the systems that I use, so go use these systems. But the reality is that the systems that a business coach needs are very different to many other service-based business or e-commerce businesses. But more than that, if the business coach is neurotypical and they're advising neurodiverse clients on, well, these are the systems I use, go forth and be fruitful, it's not setting them up for success. They've missed the customization steps, they've missed the automation, they've missed the proper integration or whatever it might be to actually make it work, but it might not have been the right tool to start with. So that's one of the first things I look at is, okay, do you have systems there and are you using them? And if you're not using them, is it because they're the wrong fit or because they haven't been set up right? And if they're the wrong fit, how can we actually make things feel better for you? Business owners, you know, they see all this advice online about, well, your work week is supposed to look like this and you're supposed to do this and you're supposed to be able to take on, you know, 20 hours of client work a week or whatever it might be, and you're supposed to be charging this and you're supposed to be doing this, but it's not necessarily built for them. You may have someone with a smaller capacity, more prone to overwhelm, more eager to hyperfocus, and so how they set the projects up might not actually be a really good fit for the hourly rate model or, you know, things like that. So it's just looking at the biggest thing that I see is neurodivergent business owners with businesses that are not built for them.
Now you say a lot of your clients are neurodivergent. How did you come across that conclusion?
It has been such an interesting thing. So this was in my own journey of, I think I've got ADHD, and eventually taking the plunge. When I was working with my clients, I realized they were all presenting with the same problems. They were all presenting with, so I had this one client who's a really great example, amazing human being, she, you know, love her so much. But she was given this advice from a business coach of, you need to do an 8-week launch. And I said to her, I went, you won't do an 8-week launch. She goes, what do you mean? I said, you'll get bored of it after 2 weeks. And I don't think this launch is going to happen. Now I'm here. I'm your team. I'm going to do everything in my power to make this happen. But I think that what you need is for me to do the groundwork and then for you to jump in the last 2 weeks. Because I think if you're trying to join with me from all the way back here, you're going to be tapped out well before you launch. That's what happened. The launch never happened. And it was so sad because she'd invested so much time and energy and money into this amazing new offer that she was so excited by. And the business coach advice that she was given was 8-week launches, the way we do things. And it killed the offer. And this is something that I've seen in several of my clients. You know, they get really excited by an idea, but then they forget about it. And so that has been one of my things is I come back to them with, hey, this is the stuff that you were excited about 6 months ago. How are you feeling about this stuff? But helping them actually check in with where their values are and the launch that they talked about but then forgot about, you know, all of those sorts of things. Since then, I think 3 of my clients have gone on to be diagnosed this year with ADHD. And they've all come back to me and said, you were right.
Now, what advice can you give to those in the business world who are dealing with ADHD?
Work out what your brain naturally resonates with and do that. If you can work out how to make things easy, you are going to have a much easier time of being a business owner. And so if that means that your hub for how you do things is a piece of paper with a mind map on it, get someone to help you pull that into a system if you need the extra systems-based stuff. If you have those hyper-focus, I'm so excited about this idea at 9 o'clock at night, be cautious with how you apply that you don't push yourself into burnout by doing it all the time. But if you're excited, follow the dopamine. So be mindful of it, don't let it control you, but also engage with it. If that's when that idea comes to life, follow it. Just work out how your brain actually ticks and start building your business around it. Do the services you offer actually fit with how your brain works, or do you need to tweak them? Is the package that, if you're charging dollar value, is a package a better option, or is a retainer a better option, or is, changing the pricing structure, changing the offer structure, changing the timeline or how you deliver things, is that going to be a better fit for how your brain works so that in the long run, you still love your business in 12 months' time, not wish that you had changed it.
Now, what advice would you tell someone who's in a job with ADHD and they come to you and say, I'm getting bored of my job. What do I, but I love what I'm doing. How do I, what do I do to stay energized and focused and keep what I'm doing?
Find something else that you love as well, so that you can be building dopamine in other places as well. Because the more dopamine positive you are, the better everything is going to stay long term. So for me this year, that has looked like I took up needlepoint lace making, sorry, needle tatting. So it's making lace around a needle. It's really fun and I'm liking it very much. It's a craft from, decades ago. I'm loving it. But that has given me something else that I'm excited about. So if someone came to me and said, I love my job, but I'm starting to get a little bit bored, I would say find something else you love as well. Be that a business, or be that a craft, or be that a social group, or a new interest, or, some sort of collective where you all join on the same project. Find something else you love doing as well, because when you bring the joy in there, that's going to fill up the dopamine.
Now, you started a podcast.
I do.
What prompted you to do that?
I had wanted to do a podcast for probably 2 years, and I kept getting stuck with, but what if I run out of things to say? What if nobody wants to listen? What if I don't have enough to share? And so I never did. And then eventually I recorded a couple episodes and they sat on my computer for probably 12 months before I finally actually launched the podcast. And I did the whole, I couldn't pick the right visual. And so it took me about 6 weeks just to work out what the podcast cover was going to be because nothing was right. And, all of those very common things that we do. But it's launched, it's had 2,000 downloads over the first however long. And it's been really exciting to be able to share things and be getting feedback from people of, I really love your episodes. It's been nice. I still have that little voice sometimes. It's like, but what if you run out of things to say? But it's good.
All right. Now you have ADHD and you run your own business. How do you manage running your business with your ADHD sitting there nagging at you?
It's a challenge sometimes. I also homeschool and I've actually got a second business as well. So I'm also an artist and the art stuff. It is a business. It has business expenses. It has a website, but it is really hard gaining momentum on that because by the time this is my primary business plus I homeschool, there's only a very little bit of me left for the art stuff. But that in itself, having multiple passions, has been really helpful. Following, making sure everything feels like a good fit has been really key. But it's just, we get up, we do breakfast, we do the homeschooling, and then I sit at my desk. And if I can just get a couple hours in, that keeps me on track. Having a list of exactly what I'm going to tackle during the week, using the tools that I have in front of me, automating as many parts of my business as possible, they're all parts that mean that I can keep doing this. The big thing for me, though, is just understanding that I have a smaller capacity than some people do. I don't have as many focus hours where my brain actually works as some people do. And yes, I might be able to get more done with those hours, but I have less of them. I also have chronic pain. I was in a car accident in 2012. I've got damage to two parts of my spine plus my hips. I've done scans this year and found bursitis in both my shoulders and both my hips. And that's as far as we've scanned. We haven't scanned anything else, but I suspect it's probably in knees and ankles as well. I have days I just can't because the pain is too high. I have a smaller capacity than other people, and being much more realistic now with what I can actually put on my list on a weekly basis has been really helpful. Because I kept overfilling it. And then by the end of the week, I felt so disappointed in myself that I'd accomplished nothing, but it was just that I'd put too much expectations for the week, if that makes sense.
All right. Now, you're also a certified period coach. How did you get to
Yes.
become that, or how did you decide to become that?
I had been following, so Stasha, the period coach, she's over West Coast of America. She's been in pioneering the industry for 13 years. I've loved her work. It's been really helpful for me over the last, 5 or 6 years myself. I've got endometriosis and PCOS as well. So it was really helpful to actually stabilize a lot of the things that I was dealing with and manage some of my pain levels. And then I started working with Stasha as one of my clients. And so I was stepping into her business to help with her marketing and all that sort of stuff. And as part of that, I was also able to see the inside of period coaching school and jump in and do it myself as well and come out the other side with the graduates that I'd been able to support over the last, year or so as well. So Stasha is phenomenal at what she does. And being able to see the patterns now with we're seeing this rise of perimenopausal women, so 40s being diagnosed with ADHD. And yes, it's partly because we have more awareness of what that is now through things like TikTok and Instagram. So people are going, oh, I do that. And actually, I'm now finding out that everybody doesn't do that. So there is part of that. But part of it as well is we now understand so much how the hormones play into ADHD as well. We know that within women, we have peaks of symptoms being almost debilitating, can't function, through to, I'm actually doing okay and everything's going really well and this is my superpower, through to, I think I need to throw everything in the rubbish bin, like go through these phases of just not functioning with our brains very well. And this escalates as the hormones shift through perimenopause as well. So it's been really interesting putting what I do together with the period coaching and being able to support my clients in finding their strengths throughout the month, but also being able to spot where things might be getting a little out of control and how we can sort of pull it back in a little bit as well.
Now, you have two businesses. You have ADHD. How do you manage both businesses along with trying to deal with your ADHD? It's got to be complicated.
It definitely is. Prioritizing, I know what is important to me. What is the first priority for the week? So there are certain things that if they don't get done, they don't get done. I know, so through my art business, I have two workshops a month. I do the kids on the first week, and I do the mums on the third week. I know what has to happen around them to make that happen. I know what my clients need throughout the week. One of the things that I was doing last year, which was really, really helpful when I had multiple ongoing clients, was batching the type of work. So on Mondays, I'd do email marketing. On Tuesdays, I'd do social media marketing. On Wednesdays, I'd do this, and actually batching the type of content. That for me was more helpful than batching the clients. So what a lot of people will do is they'll have this project happens on this day, or this project happens on this day, and this project happens on this day. But oftentimes a project will have many moving parts, or a client will have multiple different pieces that happen. Jumping back and forth between those different things can be really hard for us because we get that. When you try to jump into a new task and you just kind of have to sit there for 20 minutes while your brain catches up to the fact you're moving on to something different. So for me, what I found a helpful strategy was looking at what I've got this week. And how can I batch things as much as possible into like tasks so that, yes, I'm jumping through different clients of information, I'm jumping through my different businesses, but I'm doing the same things together. So I'm doing all the email marketing together, and then I'm doing all of this, and then I'm doing all of this. Also, my Slow Cooker is a lifesaver. I freeze meals in Ziploc bags, throw them into the slow cooker when I make lunch. It's like pressure chamber, so I don't have to worry about it being defrosted, and it's ready at dinner time. That is one of the only ways we function on a weekly basis, is the meals are in the freezer. I do them on a Sunday and I cook them through the week, because when I'm my brain finally kicks in and I'm working at 4:30 in the afternoon, I don't want to stop and make dinner. That is the last thing I want to do. And it makes me upset when I have to stop what I'm doing when I've finally got into it. So little strategies like that, using reminders. I've got another NFC tag on my washing machine that sends a timer on my phone to remind me to go and change the washing from the washing to the dryer and things like that. But it's just those little life hacks has meant I can do what I do.
Now, what advice do you have for those who are getting diagnosed with ADHD or ASD late in life?
I've got caught by this one. Understand the process for getting where you want to go. So I didn't understand that to end up with ADHD medication, I needed a psychiatrist assessment, and that the psychiatrist assessment wasn't going to honor the psychologist assessment. And so I got diagnosed back in February, and I'm still trying to get my hands on some sort of medication. I just want a couple of days. If I can take Mondays and Tuesdays just so I function to get the bulk of the work done, I know that things are going to shift for me tremendously. It's September. It's nearly September, and I've finally got the psychiatrist appointment lined up for November. So it'll take me nearly
Wow.
a whole year to go from the process of diagnosis through to medication. And part of that was I went through a psychologist rather than a psychiatrist. And then I tried going to a psychiatrist who I didn't take the time to look up the Google reviews first. And I got a few warning flags that something was off. And I cancelled the appointment, unfortunately, lost a fair chunk of money on a deposit I didn't know was non-refundable.
Ouch.
It happens, but if you are in the process of getting diagnosed late in life, ask some questions from other people who are in the community. Who diagnosed them? What was that experience like? And what was their outcome? And if you are specifically interested in medication, understand whatever the rules are in your area. Who do you need to start with? Because if you can start with the right person, things are going to be a lot easier.
Now, you said you're an artist. What kind of artwork do you do?
I do watercolor and I do miniatures. I've actually got some on my desk, so that's one I did.
Oh, wow. Very
It's
beautiful.
little, in case you can't tell. That's another one I did. That's my daughter. So I do predominantly little things. That's what I've loved. I've realized that ever since I was a little girl, I've collected tiny little things. I've got little miniature vases and miniature frogs and all sorts of things. I've always loved little things. So I mostly do watercolors, but I really love making art safe for a lot of people. I was a very creative child. I loved art, and then I stopped doing art. And part of why I stopped doing art was because I got adult with adult responsibilities and didn't have time for art. But part of it as well was there's some amazing artists in my family, but that also meant that there was a lot of criticism as well for, the shadows in the wrong spot or that angle's not quite right or all of those sorts of things. And the way my brain works is if I'm not good at something, I don't want to do it. And so I just stopped doing it. And that has been my experience speaking to many other adults is they want to create. I think there's something magical about when we do create. I think we're meant to do something, whether that's architecture or building or cooking or, whatever it is. I think we're meant to put ourselves into the world around us in some way. And when we stop creating, we're missing that, and we know that something's missing, and it starts getting a bit monotonous. We just go through the motions on a daily basis. For me, bringing art back was really transformational in that way. I was missing some spark to my day. A lot of mums, particular, I can't speak for the dads, they're not my target market, but I know for a lot of mums in particular, they're so busy caring for everyone else all of the time, from the moment they get up until the moment they go to bed, especially if they've got a business as well, between the kids and the family and the business. Someone always needs their time, and they're missing doing something for them. But art hasn't felt safe. They didn't feel like they were good enough or they could create something. And so being able to create safe spaces where we throw perfectionism out the door. And as I go through my process, I'm like, I'm going to do this. Oh, that didn't work quite how I want. That's okay. And I model the language for people so that they know that it's safe if things aren't working exactly how they wanted it to. It's been really, really nice to have that.
Your art is very beautiful. I mean, and they've always said, if you think about it, there are two sides to an autistic person, the logical side and the creative side. Obviously, you're probably a little bit of both because your business and then your art. So you're a little bit of both. But would you say your art would be one of your special interests?
Yes. Yes, for sure.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and what you and your art and what you do?
I'm on all the places. I've got TikTok now for my business account, which has been, I don't know if you saw, I had a video go viral recently. That was an experience I didn't expect to happen. But I'm on TikTok, I'm on Instagram, I'm at Knock on Wood Virtual Assistants for my business stuff and Sarah Wooden Art. I think it's sarah.wooden.art on most of the platforms, but you'll find me either way. Instagram tends to be where I hang out the most, but I'm around.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Sarah Wooden, and I'm Reed Miles, and I'll see you in the next one. See you later, Sarah.
See you.